This is the Thurman Law Revision Commission, Subcommittee Number 2, February 9, 1970, 1:30 p.m., Room 315, State Capitol Building. Today's subject, gambling offenses, preliminary draft number 1.
Directors, nice to have you back. Where's Roger? The order, and we're going to gamble.
Right. Now, the last meeting of this subcommittee was November 14th, so we have those minutes to disclose.
All right. I can't even remember. The commission. Well, Mr. Jernstead, you move that we
approve the minutes as
distributed. Any discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried. Now can we get into the gambling?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Gambling offenses.
Sounds good.
Preliminary draft number 1.
Hi.
Good right. Evening, Mr. Haas.
I live here.
You know, I came
I might mention, as far as subcommittee work, this will be the last substantive draft that this subcommittee will have to work on. That makes sense?
It does.
So, with that, to put you in a good frame of mind,
I'll be right back.
It leads you the facts. Before we get into the substance of the draft, a few preliminary remarks, I suppose, are in order on this gambling article. First of all, I should mention that the Model Penal Code does not deal with gambling. So we don't have any, even a model to look to there. There is a Model Gambling Act, much of which is reflected in the New York and Michigan approach to gambling. The Model Anti-Gambling Act was drafted by the American Bar Association, Commission on Organized Crime, and it was approved by the ABA in 1952. It's intended to be a model. It's not a uniform act, but it has been approved by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. It has quite a bit in common with the Michigan and New York approach in that it recommends the generic approach to gambling. And that is the same kind of approach we've tried to follow in our previous drafts in other areas of criminal law, and that is try to define our terms and avoid the itemization of specifics wherever possible to enable us to incorporate a number of single isolated statutes into one broad general statute, a consolidated approach. Probably the two toughest problems in this area, number one, attempting to distinguish, and that's assuming that you want to distinguish between the quote professional unquote gambler, the guy who does it for a living, the organized crime type of individual, and the casual social gambler. Now, traditionally, the laws in Oregon and in most states have not tried to draw a distinction between the two insofar as the definitive statement of the crimes of gambling is concerned, but the practical effect has been, insofar as enforcement of these laws, has been to draw that distinction between the casual social gambler, the guy who has a few boys over every Wednesday night and plays poker, from the guy who does it for a living. And in effect, that's the way the laws are enforced. This is one of the really critical questions that we've tried to resolve in this draft. Secondly, another major area insofar as Oregon's concerned, and that is the question of the pinball machines, the free play, the so-called free play pinball machines. Now, under McKee versus Foster, which some of you are familiar with, I know, the court held that these were not prohibited under Oregon law if they were in effect free play. Under this draft, free play would be treated the same as any other pinball machine, and it would be prohibited. The the commentary to the Model Gambling Act points out with respect to this problem of distinguishing between the social casual gambler and the professional, and shows that the approach they took, they gave you an option in their proposal, and I think some of their comments are in order, not only on that, but also on the question of the free play. They give you an option under the Model Gambling Act in both of these areas. In one version of their draft, they cover and prohibit free play pinball machines, and in an optional provision, they exclude these kinds of devices from the coverage of the criminal law. They say, and I should mention, this commentary to this is written by Rufus King, who has a new book out. And I was given a copy of this book at the Criminal Code Revision Seminar I attended last summer. He was there and spoke to the group. And he's recognized as one of the foremost authorities in the United States on gambling. He was counsel for the Kefauver Committee, was special counsel, and assisted the President's Crime Commission in 67 in formulating its comments with respect to organized crime in the gambling area. Rufus King points out in his commentary here that Commission has had great difficulty with the problem of finding a formula which would exclude the social or casual gambler from prosecution and punishment, yet which would not result in opening a large breach in the statute for the benefit of professional gamblers and their patrons. The Commission recognizes that it is unrealistic to promulgate a law literally aimed at making a criminal offense of the friendly election bet, the private social card game among friends, etc. Nevertheless, it is imperative to confront the professional gambler with a statutory facade that is wholly devoid of loopholes. It should be noted that the prosecuting attorneys who were asked for comment on prior drafts of the Model Gambling Act were also divided in their opinions as to the desirability of making an express exemption for the casual or social gambler. Many prosecutors were flatly opposed to any such exemption because it offered a loophole for the professional gambler. Many state laws at the present time penalize all forms of gambling without any exceptions for the social gambler. Of course, this includes Oregon. It is doubtful whether the latter has been unduly harassed under such laws. Because of the sharp division of opinion as to how social and non-professional gambling should be dealt with, Section 3 offers two alternatives. Section 3, without the optional subsection 2, penalizes all gambling as defined in Section 2, sub 2, throwing the casual social gambler into the same category as the patron of the professional. If the optional subsection is inserted, Section 3 operates to exempt the social gambler from prosecution and punishment so long as he is not participating in a professional game or play. So I wanted to give you that as background on this. This draft, the New York and Michigan approach, attempts to draw this distinction in the statute between the social gambler and the professional. Now, I think this question is really a tough one. I suppose this is probably the one single thing we're going to have to talk about the most.
What about charitable purposes? Church back to bingo?
Washington's. Didn't I read that? Under a bill, too.
There is a bill. Yeah, they're redoing their gambling.
Yeah. Okay. How social are clubs, in your interpretation of it?
You mean like a fraternal organization,
right,
that sort of thing? I think they would be excluded under this draft. I think they would be excluded so long as, well, I don't know.
If they own the machines, and if they. What if they don't own the machines and they franchise it, you know?
Well, I think the best thing to do is to go through these definitions. and
I was hoping we could avoid that.
Because I don't want to oversell this thing, and I don't want you to think there's something in here that there isn't. well, and of course, it's tough to say now, because we define things like bookmaking, and we define things like gambling. And we define a player. And then we prohibit profiting from gambling activity or promotes gambling activity. Now, when you get to your fraternal organization, I suppose that the argument could be made that they are profiting from the gambling activity. And
but that isn't the way the gambling's sold.
Your fraternal organizations are involved in, other than machines, there's some pretty good-sized poker games that
right.
show up at these things. That, question is, should they be prohibited or not?
Well, now, if you got a poker game among brothers in the fraternity, and they're sitting there playing poker, and it's just, it's on even terms, everybody is going for the pot, and the house isn't getting a wreck or a rake off, then I think you'd be excluded. But if your lodge, say, is getting a percentage or something like that in order to let them play, then you got a different ballgame. But I don't think this would prohibit the guys gambling in the Elks Lodge any more than it would prohibit them gambling in your home or Tom's home. As long as, there isn't, it's not being promoted to make a profit for a group or an individual or a firm or organization of some kind.
Then, by that definition, the gambling for charitable purposes to raise money for a charitable purpose would be likewise prohibited.
I would think so. Yeah.
Okay, why don't you nail us on the definitions briefly, or if you see necessary?
Well, I suppose we ought to go through the definitions before we get to the statement of crimes. We define quite a few terms. As you can see, we define 12 different terms, some of which really doesn't change the existing law too much, but some which does. Now, subsection 1 on page 1, bookmaking means promoting gambling activity by unlawfully accepting bets from members of the public as a business, rather than in a casual or personal fashion, upon the outcomes of future contingent events. Future contingent events would be things like football games, boxing matches, horse races, sort of. Now, unlawful is defined under sub 12, means not specifically authorized by law. Now, I point out in my commentary a little later on that there can be lawful gambling. There could be lawful gambling in this state right now. The only thing that's prohibited in this state under our Constitution is a lottery. And all gambling is not necessarily a lottery, although you've got the prize, chance, and consideration formula that fits most forms of gambling. But our statutes now, of course, we have specific statutes on lotteries, and then we have statutes on forbidden games and gambling devices. And so this draft approach would leave the legislature free to authorize specific forms of gambling, either expressly or impliedly, so long as it doesn't run afoul of the constitutional prohibition against a lottery. Okay, so we define those terms. Now, a contest of chance means any contest, game, gaming scheme, or gaming device in which the outcome depends in a material degree upon an element of chance, notwithstanding that skill of the contestants may also be a factor therein. Now, this is talked about later on also, this what kind of test, and the courts have had considerable difficulty with this formulation passed, trying to say whether or not if it has to be pure chance or pure skill, or whether the two can intermingle. Now, there's a split of authority around the country under the gambling acts and statutes, whether or not it's a lottery, if there's any form of chance involved. Or some courts have said if there's any kind of chance involved, some of the courts have said that's forbidden. You can't do it. other courts have looked and used what they call a predominant chance approach. In other words, if the chance is predominant, although there may be an element of skill involved in the game, it's still prohibited. Now, Oregon has followed what's called the dominant chance approach, and the court has recognized that there may be an element of skill involved, but if the dominating factor is chance, then it's prohibited under our present law. And so this this would continue Oregon law in that respect. This, in effect, is a statutory statement of the dominant chance doctrine, as opposed to the pure chance. Some courts have said, not in Oregon but elsewhere, that it has to be pure chance before it becomes a lottery. Okay, now gambling is defined as meaning that a person stakes or risks something of value upon the outcome of a contest of chance or a future contingent event not under his control or influence, upon an agreement or understanding that he or someone else will receive something of value in the event of a certain outcome. Gambling does not include bona fide business transactions, valid under the law of contracts for the purchase or sale at a future date of securities or commodities, and agreements to compensate for loss caused by the happening of chance, including but not limited to contracts of indemnity or guarantee and life, health, or accident insurance. Under sub 4, gambling device means any device, machine, paraphernalia, or equipment that is used or usable in the playing phases of any gambling activity, whether that activity consists of gambling between persons or gambling by a person involving the playing of a machine. Lottery tickets, policy slips, and other items used in the playing phases of lottery and policy schemes are not gambling devices within this definition. 5, lottery or policy means an unlawful gambling scheme in which A, the players pay or agree to pay something of value for chances represented and differentiated by numbers or by combinations of numbers or by some other medium, one or more of which chances are to be designated the winning ones, and B, the winning chances are to be determined by a drawing or by some other method, and C, the holders of the winning chances are to receive something of value. This definition then would retain the prize chance consideration test that's traditionally been employed in Oregon.
Well, the this would be would exclude the situation where you go to the gas station and you get the chances on the game contest thing. Where apparently there's, I think they usually stipulate that there's no purchase necessary or something.
Yeah, this would not prohibit that, because you're not paying for the chance that you're paying for your gasoline. Now, there may be some other kind of statutory law that the legislature might want to enact to prohibit that kind of thing. I mean, that's a different question, but I don't think as far as the gambling. And this would not be contrary to what has been the law in Oregon with respect to those kinds of games. Now, I don't think they have been ever construed as a lottery.
But no, just Safeway versus Ashenbrenner said specifically not.
Yeah, right. I cite that case.
Yeah, but they're kind of tortured decisions, aren't they? In other words, they have the same problem we have. Okay?
Well, I think they finally considered it on the basis of the fact that there was no consideration involved, no requirement that the person put forth any of his own money in order for the chance. Therefore, one element of the lottery was missing. It wasn't a lottery. That's what Ashmere essentially held, wasn't it?
Yeah,
there we go.
That's right.
Of course, that, in my judgment, subjectively, is indulging in a philosophy that, or in a theory that they do it for a commercial purpose. And the fact that you can't trace a penny actually crossing hands for the chance, the purpose is not for making a more informed Oregon or whatever, it's to get you in the store to make purchases.
Yeah.
And
it seems to me that, and certainly there are good arguments to be made against these kind of game things that the gas stations and supermarkets have. But I don't think the answer is to try to get them under your gambling laws. I think your consumer protection area is where you want to deal with those. Okay, mutual or the numbers game means a form of lottery in which the winning chances or plays are not determined upon the basis of a drawing or other act on the part of persons conducting or connected with the scheme, but upon the basis of the outcome of a future contingent event otherwise unrelated to the particular scheme. Of course, this is to get at the kind of situation where the winning number will depend upon how the horses run in a certain in three races in the afternoon race, or what the Dow Jones averages, the total number of stocks traded on the market. Any number of things can be picked and are picked. Of course, now Oregon doesn't have this kind of a problem on any great scale, in my knowledge. But at the same time, I think if that our code should be equipped to deal with this kind of situation. All right, player means a person who engages in any form of gambling solely as a contestant or bettor without receiving or becoming entitled to receive any profit therefrom other than personal gambling winnings, and without otherwise rendering any material assistance to the establishment, conduct, or operation of the particular gambling activity. A person who gambles at a social game of chance on equal terms with the other participants therein does not otherwise render material assistance to the establishment, conduct, or operation thereof by performing without fee or remuneration acts directed toward the arrangement or facilitation of the game, such as inviting persons to play, permitting the use of premises therefore, and supplying cards or other equipment used therein. A person who engages in bookmaking is not a player.
I don't want to be a nitpicker, but I have heard of games where the host might frequently take a little rake off for the beer he's bought for the evening or something of this sort, you know. This is a nitpicking point, but he would be contributing to the establishment, the entertainment. Not that we're going to have people undercover to determine this in the instances, but
yeah, I've heard of those kind of things too.
Well, that isn't. That's kind of. I see what you mean, but it's jurisdiction.
It's a very small point, of course.
Right.
But of course, in your Elks Club situation, where, or not to name any particular organization, in your fraternal organizations, being a prosecutor, I've never belonged to one of them. It's my own service in State versus Langley, but I've heard that their games sometimes run from small to a substantial amount, and that the house may not be directly involved. They're still directly involved in the sale of alcohol, dues, membership, and things of that sort. I don't know. But this is a specific enough exclusion of that type of activity if it's our intent to exclude it.
I think you'd just about have to go look at their charter or their constitution or something just to see how it's worded as far as profit making is concerned.
It'd be easy to word it.
Wouldn't be much different, Tom, than to draw a wild analogy to the suing the owners of Multnomah Stadium City for the fact that there was a football game there that they arranged, provided the sale of beer and other beverages and everything else, and someone else transacts and bet on the game.
Yeah, that would be.
I agree.
That's an amendment's point. Let's forget it.
And of course, I think it's good to keep in mind here, just as elsewhere in our proposed code, that anytime we use the word person, because of the way we've defined person, it includes non-human entities such as corporations, partnerships, associations, and that sort of thing. So that an organization, whether it's a corporation or otherwise.
I just had a thought. I'd like to clarify. Wait, would this deal in the area of the contingent fee? And Wally wouldn't be concerned.
That's fun. And why we're there are those at this table who probably might see the cap, but
I don't think this would prohibit the contingent fee.
You don't think that's a game of chance?
I want to get that in the commentary. I'm sure it's a game of chance.
I want to get that in the commentary. In fact, under sub 3, I suppose along with contracts of insurance, we could slug in something.
There we go.
Okay, now we get to 8 and 9, which are very critical to the statement of the crimes themselves. Profits from gambling activity means that a person other than as a player accepts or receives money or other property pursuant to an agreement or understanding with another person, whereby he participates or is to participate in the proceeds of gambling activity. And then 9 goes right along with this. Promotes gambling activity means that a person acting other than as a player engages in conduct that materially aids any form of gambling activity. Conduct of this nature includes, but is not limited to, conduct directed toward the creation or establishment of the particular game, contest, scheme, device, or activity involved, toward the acquisition or maintenance of premises, paraphernalia, equipment, or apparatus, therefore, toward the solicitation or inducement of persons to participate therein, toward the conduct of the playing phases thereof, toward the arrangement of any of its financial or recording phases, or toward any other phase of its operation. A person promotes gambling activity if, having substantial proprietary control or other authoritative control over premises being used with his knowledge for purposes of gambling activity, he permits that activity to occur or continue, or makes no effort to prevent its occurrence or continuation. And these are really the two ways in which you run afoul of some of the sections that we have in here. Then 10 defines slot machine, means a gambling device that as a result of the insertion of a coin or other object operates either completely automatically or with the aid of some physical act by the player in such a manner that depending upon elements of chance it may eject something of value. A device so constructed or readily adaptable or convertible to such use is no less a slot machine because it is not in working order or because some mechanical act or manipulation or repair is required to accomplish its adaptation, conversion, or workability. Nor is it any less a slot machine because apart from its use or adaptability as such, it may also deliver or sell or deliver something of value on a basis other than chance, such as a little gumball or something like that, or a little plastic trinket or token.
That would also cover the carnival deal, wouldn't it?
The claw?
Yeah, the claw, the crane deal that picks up stuff.
Well, yeah, and of course where... Well, where you get in, I think where you're going to get to that kind of thing too is because of our definition of contest of chance.
Is that illegal today? In Oregon, do you know the claw deal?
I think so.
I haven't been to a carnival in so long.
I'm sure it would be.
You always get something.
This is one of those things where.
How about pitching? It used to be pennies. Dimes now. Aren't those things?
Well, you see,
we haven't stayed fair.
What you have to do, you have to apply this dominant chance theory and say, well, now is what is
they
chance?
Are, they are illegal. They are illegal, but I think they've been generally condoned. That's a statement I can come up with.
Okay.
We've for 3 years running, I kept shutting down the Gresham Fair. And I tired of it.
You got in free.
One of the real nice guys.
I don't know. I think those things have been kind of looked upon by your DAs as de minimis, you know.
Well, that's what happened to District Attorney Langley, as you know. He happened to walk through an area where there was some gambling going on for a charitable purpose. And it was later found out that he had done so and had not prosecuted, and he was suspended from practice for 2 years. I had to read that case if there were a prosecutor. It's frightening.
Well, I cite Langley in my commentary. Not necessarily for that proposition.
But what's the evil of not the one-armed bandit, but all the other slot machines from
your other materials, or maybe from your prosecuting experience? Why are they? Why do we have horse races, bingo at churches, and all this?
We don't have bingo at churches now. That's.
I was being amateur. I thought perhaps some of them occurred somewhere.
But why
do we say that the pinball machine of bygone era is bad, but the occasional high stake, and I've heard some extraordinarily high stakes at some golf clubs and lodges in this vicinity. Why is that all right?
This is no more than special legislation. You have special legislation allowing the existence of the Multnomah County, or the Multnomah Kennel Club, and various other racetracks and county subdivisions for their fairs to have this type of gambling. It's specifically allowed, and there's no distinction between that and a poker game, that and a slot machine, as far as elements
except
of chance or degree of
strictly controlled.
Except that it's strictly controlled, and the state makes a substantial profit.
And I think it's only two fairs. I mean, the state fair and the Multnomah County fair.
Mm. Union County, Baker County,
Tillamook County.
You can gamble on horse races
in
those?
You betcha.
That's right.
I've been there.
Of course, here's the thing, though. There are Oregon cases.
You can sit there in the crowd.
Oh, no. I mean, they have a booth set up for the whole bit. You go down and you push your $2 on the nose or wherever you want. And this is, I happen to know, it's allowed under statute. There's special legislation for it. And it's just, if you want to call a spade, it's a state hypocrisy, if you want that. They're a partner. They're the people who are taking the profit.
Is it because slots are not, and I'm talking pinball machines, let me get off slot machines. One-armed bandit, I see that. But good heavens, the hours spent by most of us sweating over a nickel in a pinball machine, you know, that's all we got out of it was a free game. I realize that's abused, but.
Well, of course, one thing, too, when you're talking about a card game at the Elks Lodge, or you're talking about a horse race, a paramutual betting, kind of the kind of system Oregon has. I think you got a lot of different situations you have where you've got pinball machines and you've got slot machines that traditionally are controlled by racketeers, and Rufus King points out, this is a $7 billion industry in this country. $7 billion a year changes hands through slots and numbers games, and of course the revenue from gambling goes to finance and underwrite all the other illegal activities that are conducted by organized crime. And of course a slot machine or a pinball machine, with a slot machine, number one, you can control those things so that the chance of winning is just infinitesimal when you look at the odds.
We were all in the military, weren't we?
You know, yeah. This is for the record.
No, I was going to say we worked at the club. So
well, sure, what I mean is, this is where you're going to get a large volume of profit, and where you've got large volume of profits, where you're going to get your organized criminals.
However, back in Oregon, when these things were just as illegal as they are now, but were prominent and prevalent under certain city regulations, I don't believe, nor am I aware of any reports which indicates that we were at that time really subjected to an organized crime situation. Not saying that we wouldn't have been. I'm talking about the Elkins period, things of this sort.
The thing that bothers me, I'm doing what Don indicated we were going to get into, and I've done it every time I've gotten to this area. Try to find some basis when a 5-year-old child says, "Why, Daddy?" I can give him an answer. You know, some train, some thought, some thread of why we're doing these. And I realize that hopeless, perhaps. But I'd like to know why we can permit horse racing. And I think we've all touched on one, it's the state, two, the state gets a profit in some of these things. And then three, your point, that notoriously, or historically perhaps, pinballs have wound up being run by mafia elements.
Well, you only have two choices. One is to legalize and license and rigid controls. The other is to, you say the alternative to that is what Don has stated. And then you have to make a value judgment, I think, of the cost to the public of the former.
How about foosball and
what's the
shuffleboard
and some of these other things that don't have the glass and they have little steel balls, but they generate about as much gambling, as my experience has been, gambling, you know, as pinball machines that we did. We just leave them, those don't quite fit the mold, so we leave them out, or?
Well, in this particular instance, the management will not directly participate in the profits of the game.
Yeah, if you've got...
I see.
If you just got...
Although they do charge...
To play, just
to use...
Then they can gamble or not.
Yeah, all right, all right.
Yeah, if you and I go in and play the shuffleboard, what will you and I do between us is our business. It would be under this draft. See, I mean...
Besides, wouldn't that be exempted anyway under our skill concept?
It's the same way the pool table. Obviously,
yeah, I think,
the pool game hardly in the country goes on betting on.
It's too bad they're on the record. Eh?
Well, we can always turn off.
Lynn's not paying attention anyway.
I'm off gambling. Can I wait till Friday night?
I think we got an investigator.
You're
going
to be the first one in line to get in that
track.
But it is Friday night.
What's Friday night?
One in the Meadows.
Right.
Oh, is it open already?
The Meadows comes on this week.
Oh, there
goes,
appropriate.
There goes your weekend, Representative Carson.
Oh, dear.
And
I will have to be in Portland this weekend, I guess.
But I don't think we're going to resolve the conflict between the state legalized gambling and control in certain areas and the other matters that have been traditionally prohibited in the state. I don't think we're going to make that a very valid distinction there. Can you cite to me under our present legislation any circumstance where a private home or a regular Wednesday night poker game has been infiltrated and busted?
Well, I can cite you one case down in Lane
County
a few years ago.
I remember something like that.
And I certainly didn't have any. Chairman's awful quiet.
Well, of course.
And I don't really know. As a matter of fact, I was in law school at the time, and I don't know what precipitated this, but there was a friendly game like that.
I believe there was also some liquor sales involved.
And there were quite a
that
few.
That one I know about.
Quite a few very prominent citizens hauled in.
It was all a ruse to get a man elected to public office. It's the whole purpose of it.
You still have your badge, Polly?
No, I got my vest I wore, though.
Wasn't there a little dingy one, too, during a session or two ago at the legislature down here?
Yes.
There was a real good one.
Yes, there was.
Came close.
Very,
yeah. I only think three instances where I was directly involved in the gambling prosecution in Portland, and these were professional games. They held that we had gotten a man or two in to wherever the floaters were coming through and setting up the local people, and it was a real open game. And I've yet to hear, except in these rather specific examples oriented toward political implications, that it's been misused, perhaps.
Well, under this, Don, then I could have my pinball machine that neither paid off, unless it's adaptable or convertible, which it could be. Suppose it's just for a nickel, I got five ball bearings that I could push around to watch a board light up. Skill.
And that's all you get?
That's all. I don't get a free game, I don't get a payout.
Well, that wouldn't be prohibited.
Okay. Even though it might be adaptable or convertible.
Right.
But the reason we go to the free game idea is just a matter of practicality.
Well, it's a matter of practicality because what often happens, those free games aren't really free games when it comes right down to it. Those are convertible to cash money.
Yeah.
Yes.
When I was a kid, we couldn't sell them to management, but you could sell them to someone else.
Well, or you can sell them to management in many instances. I don't think that... I think most DAs will tell you this, that... this is one of the problems you run into. They say, you know, at the local pool hall or the tavern or wherever it has to be, it says free play, but you know, unless you catch them in the act of changing hands, the money changing hands being paid off for redemption of the free games, then there's nothing you can do about it. And this does overrule McKee versus Foster. This would change Oregon law. There's no question about that. Free games would be prohibited.
I think the chairman just feels that those free games have redeeming social value.
And was never able to get one. I don't want to be stopped. Someday I'm going to get a free game.
And of course, I think this is one of the problems we're having up in King County, Washington. with their pinball machines up there is this free play gimmick. They're not really free play at all.
That represents cash.
Sure, it's money.
And it does in 99% of the places in Oregon.
Why, sure. No question.
As you play those things, the more you double your
wash.
Sure.
Heaven, yes. Well, you should get out of my account.
And again, we get back to the policy question, is that there's nothing sinister about a machine, and there's nothing sinister about playing a machine and with skill winning games or being paid off. But it's the blanket policy position that if you have those, they will be controlled by racketeers and underworld sorts.
That's the best rationalization. The other, that we're protecting father's Friday night paycheck for the family, is a laugh when you have Port of Meadows and the Kennel Club, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very poor argument.
Oh, man, Blitz, Weinhardt.
That's right.
But that's the decision that has to be made, I think.
Does this cover punch boards?
Yeah. Punch boards would be prohibited.
You're not going to have any fun in Hood River County.
But whereas punch boards,
back to the
punch boards are illegal now.
I realize that.
You know, we wouldn't be changing it. We wouldn't be changing anything with this draft as far as punch boards are concerned. I think it's a more honest approach. I think it's certainly more honest insofar as it tries to distinguish the friendly social gambler from the other guy. But I think we have to recognize the inherent danger in trying to do this, that we may be leaving a loophole here. And this is what gave the Model Gambling Act people trouble, trying to recognize this and at the same time not giving the professional gambler something he can hang his hat on.
Well, when we're talking about casual gamblers, we're generally, and for referring to cards, we're talking to about fraternal organizations or that in the private home. And allowing it on a casual or social basis in a private home is a loophole big enough to drive a truck through, because you could always have a couple of friends from San Francisco that are visiting you. And you could be, there's no limit on stakes or anything of this sort. And I think it would open up, I think it would just open up gambling. Period. From a practical prosecution standpoint, how are you going to prove that it's something other than social?
Well, that's the alternative we have. We're tightening this up so that it falls back on prosecutor judgment again, like much of the other code, and or leaving a hole. Well, why don't you go on with the definition? Go on in here.
Okay. Now, I think it was to 11, something of value.
Mm-hmm.
Means any property, any money or property, any token, object, or article exchangeable for money or property, or any form of credit or promise directly or indirectly contemplating transfer of money or property, or of any interest therein, or involving extension of a service, entertainment, or privilege of playing at a game or scheme without charge. Now, that's the language that would overrule McKee versus Foster. An unlawful means not specifically authorized by law, which would just be a way of...
What kind of, let me ask you this, Don, do we have any idea today that if we adopted that and we go the route of the no free play, who we're affecting, how many pinballs or employment people or...
In Multnomah County, Dick Groner's thing.
Well, this has been substantially reduced, I think, in many counties by enforcement of our present laws. Many counties have done, depending again upon the tempo the district attorney wishes to, and the sheriff or police department wants to put on. You'll find it existing in various degrees around the state. I don't believe that in Oregon it's that big a business. I'm convinced that it is.
Yeah, even now, I think a lot of your barroom operators and whatnot, rather than put up with the constant harassment and whatnot,
just get rid of them.
They just don't fuss with them.
Yeah, that's right.
How about a pool on the Rose Bowl game, which are traditional in lots and lots of places, mm-hmm. or specific games?
Informal, social type thing?
We would be saying, by law, what we say in effect now, go ahead and do it, because it isn't, those things aren't moved against the prosecution. I don't know if you've had any in Portland, maybe, where you've got some guy running one for his own prop or something.
Well, about the drawing for the Queen's Buick in the Rose Festival has been an open lottery for some time, if you want to call it
that's
that.
Right, you buy a little button or something?
You buy a little button, you get a little number, and you may get the Queen's Buick.
Well, Don, and again, on concerning the social aspect of it, we don't define a person who gambles at a social game of chance on equal terms with the other participants. I mean, it is just totally, there's no, when we think of the penny ante Friday night poker game, or it could be the $100 opener, there's no monetary determination of what is a social game, there's really no definition of it, is there? And it does just throw it.
Well, it depends on the circle of friends you play poker with, I suppose.
Well, you'd be pretty sociable by the time you started.
But I think, well, it isn't quite that open, because when you fall back on some of these other definitions we've got in here, under 8 and 9, for example, particularly those two, I think, narrow it down a little bit, so I think you'd have some hope at getting to the guy that...
Well, that excludes players, though.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that this doesn't just make poker playing legal. Period.
Poker playing under certain circumstances legal.
Under circumstances when it's a social game of chance on equal terms with the other participants.
Right, which would mean the house doesn't take a rake.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's quite a sweeping departure, isn't it?
Well, it might very well be, but I think it might bring it around to conform to the way things are.
That's right. When you pretty well expect to see some... if you're going to legalize poker, period, I would expect to see some substantial changes in the...
Right. Don't you think, or at least my idea, that this question is sensitive and has some pretty broad implications, that maybe we should pass it just for the purpose of getting it to full committee?
Did that once.
Well, you came out all right.
Now, the way the Model Anti-Gambling Act reads, their Section 3, it's entitled Gambling and Professional Gambling. And sub 1, whoever engages in gambling or solicits or induces another to engage in gambling shall be fined or imprisoned, etc. Then there's sub 2, it says, this is their optional provision, natural persons shall be exempt from prosecution and punishment under subsection 1 for any game, wager, or transaction which is incidental to a bona fide social relationship, is participated in by natural persons only, and in which no person is participating directly or indirectly in professional gambling. And
what's a natural person? Hmm? What's a natural person?
Well, as opposed to a corporation.
I see.
Let me ask you this, Don, on page 3, where we say it's okay to gamble socially, then I can see where we try to limit that by promoting gambling activities. But then we exclude other than as a player, if you had a sole proprietor that owned a business establishment and promoted gambling activity and functioned as a player also. He'd be all right, wouldn't he?
Well, no, he wouldn't be all right. He might not be gambling, but he would be profiting or promoting gambling. And as you look over in our sections...
But don't we say other than as a player, though? In both of those.
Yeah, but player, though, player means a person... solely, gambling solely as a contestant.
He can be a player and the promoter.
Yeah. That wouldn't save him if he was just because he played too. Because to be a player, to be excluded as a player, he has to be a player solely. Solely as a contestant or better. And if he does anything else, he isn't going to be a player anymore.
I don't know. I'm kind of worried about opening.
A specific example that we had quite a problem with in Portland here a couple of years ago was that one particular park over the north section of town was practically made unusable by the public because of the large number of people who gathered there and shoot craps. Now, in this particular instance, I don't believe you could prove that any of them were other than players. There's no prohibition as to place or thing here. I mean, just public parks or this would. I don't know how many indictments that I got out of that, 40 or 50, under the straight gambling law that this was a prohibited game, playing a forbidden game. It would open that up. I find five of us socially could go down to a public park and get up against the side of the handball backboard and shoot craps all afternoon for money.
Well,
pitching dollars.
Is that bad because it involves gambling, or is it bad though because of the locus of the?
Well, but this doesn't describe the locale or the locus.
Well, you'd have it. You could probably bring a nuisance or something.
Well, that's why I was wondering if we wouldn't have it covered elsewhere in our code, regardless whether it's gambling or not. We'd have to take a look and see if we've got that covered under disorderly conduct.
I just have to restate, I think that something like this is just going to have to be a full committee decision.
Oh yeah, I think, well,
I mean, the ideas advanced here are may be a valid thought, but I think it's full committee business.
Well, I'd like to see us reach ahead and either put it in or take it out as a subcommittee and then proceed from the standpoint that if we take it up to the full committee for their feeling, my experience has been, Don can comment on it, it costs us some time in the full committee so they get the background of it so they can make a decision, and then back to us for a decision, and they don't always follow through the next time it comes up. So I think that whatever we do, if we keep it in, we ought to make sure that we present the other side.
How strongly you feel
take
about
it?
How strongly you feel about it, one way or the other?
About
on the social?
Oh, I do. I personally, yeah. I don't feel that strongly about it either way. I felt it was the kind of decision that we ought to.
Yeah. It's a straightforward approach to it.
I mean, these are areas that certainly the commissioners on uniform state laws grappled with 10 years ago, longer than that. And it seems to me, though, that recognizing there are some possibilities here for getting trapped in your statutes. I mean, what we've tried to do as we've gone along here is we've tried to draft a code that's fundamentally an honest code, I think, and not try to say it one way and look the other way. And I think we've tried to draft a set of criminal laws that mean what they say and say what they mean and not say it's illegal and then say, yeah, but we know that everybody does it. And it seems to me that this approach to law is bad, and I think that this was one of the recommendations made in the President's Crime Commission report in 67. This is one of the areas that brings the criminal law into disrepute, and it creates disrespect for your whole body of criminal law if you've got a crime on the books or a set of crimes that aren't enforced. And everybody knows that people play poker, and everybody knows that they bet on the ball games,
What if we adopted it the way it is, and we had the situation Tom spoke of? You got the 10 guys flying in from Los Angeles, and they set up their game at the Hilton, and they get the word out, and other people from Portland are invited, and people from Seattle, and they have their big poker game there, and sizable stakes. Let's say one, this probably would not cover it, and or two, do we want to regulate? Probably I got them in reverse order. I mean, is that what we want to get at? And if so, have we done it?
I'm not so sure that we couldn't control that under what you have. I think that we might be able to show this was...
that they're profiting from it.
Right.
I mean, if you've got that kind of game going on, you ought to have some pretty good evidence.
I wouldn't give you a conviction. You wouldn't convince me beyond a reasonable doubt that it wasn't a social game, I don't think.
Unfortunately, you're not the average juror, or fortunate.
Yeah.
I'd take a shot at it if I had out-of-state people in there that I could establish did nothing else other than travel.
Professional gambler.
Well, sure. I'd take a shot at it.
Yeah, you'd yeah.
But and what would be wrong with it if it was a business deal and they just did it for fun that night?
Right.
I like this, personally.
Do you think we're ready for a motion
on the definition?
On the policy?
Or you want to go through that?
Unless somebody sees some particular thing, the effect of adopting the definitions will pretty well cast the philosophy on the balance of it. Is that not right?
Well, yeah, because all of these definitions, of course,
are key to the social aspect.
Right, and they're all applied in the other sections.
Okay, Mr. Haas has a motion.
I'll move the adoption of
Section 1. Any discussion? Okay, we'll call the roll, please.
Senator Drinkstead?
Aye.
Representative Haas?
Aye.
Mr. Dale?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Okay, I do think, however, that Tom, if you ought to try and be there when this is up at full committee, so even if Lee's back, so that we get a... I think that we ought to know, the commission ought to know what they're doing.
I would like the comments to show that my vote is based upon the fact that I feel it's an honest approach to an existing situation, and one of the reasons for putting it forward is for full committee consideration. And it's possible that I may adopt the opposite position at that time.
Okie dokie. Section 2.
Okay, Section 2, and of course our extensive definitions then allow us to make a short statement of the crime, and that is promoting gambling in the second degree. A person commits the crime of promoting gambling in the second degree if he knowingly promotes or profits from unlawful gambling activity. And if he does that, it's prohibited.
Move the adoption of Section 2.
Second. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, do you want to call the roll on 2? I think you've got 4 ayes.
Okay. Senator Drinkstead?
Aye.
Representative Haas?
Aye.
Mr. O'Dell?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Passes on to 3. Boy, yeah, I had a steam up here. Or what happened last time?
Page 7. Okay, Section 3, then, this continues the attempt to try to distinguish between the really professional and the other guy, although here we've got two guys that are doing bad things, but this one does it on a larger scale. A person commits the crime of promoting gambling in the first degree if he violates Section 2 of this article by 1, engaging in bookmaking to the extent that he receives or accepts in any one day more than 5 bets totaling more than $500. Or 2, receiving in connection with a lottery or mutual scheme or enterprise, A, money or written records from a person other than a player whose chances or plays are represented by such money or records, or B, more than $500 in any one day of money played in the scheme or enterprise. Now, these are arbitrary figures and dollar amounts. These are taken from the Michigan Code, and which in turn is based on the New York definition. Looking at Oregon's situation, you may feel this is too high. Maybe you want to scale it down a little. For the purposes of Portland, Oregon, whether you'd want the same kind of gauge to be used that you'd use in Detroit, Michigan, or New York City, something else.
We're talking about a felony probably here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was common practice when back I was in undergraduate school. I worked at a manufacturing plant, and it was common practice for a fellow who lived near the kennel club to at the end of the day, the fellows would come around and say, put those slips, they say, put so much on so and so for me, and hand the person the money. And this person would go out because he went every night and place these other people's bets. And I would have supposed in some instances he was carrying certainly more than five bets, and probably in some instances more than $500.
But he's not engaged in bookmaking, I don't think.
Well, he doesn't take a profit.
He's got to come under sub 1 of section 1, bookmaking. First of all, he's got to be bookmaking.
And it's got to be as a business.
Yeah, I see. That would be an...
So your guy wouldn't be...
Under those circumstances.
So if he's a punk that's doing it but doesn't get into the big trade, we let him go. I know there was another $500. That'd probably be a misdemeanor. And if he gets the practice up and start wheeling and dealing, and he goes big time.
That's the old rule of punkus de minimis.
Punkus non curat lex.
Well, and also to extend on my one example, within my own personal knowledge, many of these people who collected this money for bets, thinking they were bad ones, didn't place them and only paid the ones that won and pocketed the other money. How about that?
He's crooked.
Also paid tuition. I just wonder.
Just working your way through town. Let's not hinder private enterprise.
Yeah, right. Well, here, I'll get a letter from higher ed on that one.
Yeah.
Trying to cut down tuition again.
I'll move the adoption of Section 3.
I don't think 500 is arbitrary. I second it. I mean, I think it's arbitrary, but it's proper.
Okay. Want to call the roll on Section 3.
Senator Drumstead?
Aye.
Senator
Hawes? Aye.
Mr. Dale?
Aye.
Mr. Sherman?
Aye.
Section 4.
All right, now before we get to 4, I think you...
Are we going too fast for you?
Well, yeah, you lost me here. Well, on page 8, I want to just call attention to the commentary there, because I have tried to call attention to what we're doing here. Your first paragraph there on page 8 of the commentary. The individual citizen who places a bet is not criminal. Now, I think that maybe we ought to discuss this just a little bit. Now, do you think that there's any value in trying to distinguish, as far as the bettor is concerned, looking at it from the other side of the picture, trying to distinguish between the man who places a bet with his buddy or engages in a social game and the bettor who places a bet with a professional, knowing that the guy's a professional and knowing that he's participating in an illegal lottery or an illegal activity of some sort. Now, this does not. Now, the Model Gambling Act does try to draw that distinction. They try and would prohibit the man from engaging in gambling with the professional. But it seemed to me that...
Buyer beware.
It's awfully difficult to try to draw the line there, and I don't know whether you can or not. You've got to show, certainly, that you're going to have to show knowledge.
That becomes a... I don't like that, because that becomes a crime by reputation. You do it with this fellow, but if you do it with this fellow because his reputation is such that he's does it professionally, then you've committed a crime.
It's kind of like patronizing a prostitute. I mean, I think that it's analogous there. I mean, you say you can't... It's okay to buy it, but you can't sell it. That's I think the same kind of argument can be made here.
Of course, that's what we are saying.
That's what we say.
Yeah,
that's what we say. Mm-hmm.
Consistent,
very inconsistencies. Yeah, we are. We're saying here it's okay for Joe Doe to place a bet, buy a number, whatever he does, with the professional, knowing full well this guy's a professional. But you don't...
What's wrong with the professional? Really?
Yeah.
Well, what's the evil we're trying to lose?
We did the same thing with prostitution, so...
Well, like I say here, the underlying purpose is to get at the professional who exploits the popular urge to gamble.
That's all I meant.
Okay, I just so...
Kenny,
okay, then on page 9, I set out here our existing statutes. There are quite a few, as you can see, quite a number of statutes dealing with lotteries and gambling devices, slot machines, etc. Page 10 sets out the Oregon constitutional prohibition and some of the other statutes. Now, it was not my intent to have our draft repeal any of the statutes outside of the criminal chapters, that is chapters 167. These others, providing for double recovery and civil action and all that, I'm not suggesting, the injunction procedures, abatement procedures for nuisances, gambling houses. The only thing that might have to be done there would be some internal reference changes to correspond with our new code, but I wasn't suggesting that we repeal any of these non-criminal statutes.
Are we going to just, Don, just as a matter of procedure, are we flagging these for legislative council so that, for instance, I was looking on page 11, the new one that we passed apparently for 462080, that could be updated if this passes and just says any person who's been convicted of, and, are you flagging legislative council noting these changes? Will they have these available to
them?
Yeah,
I've got a whole list of collateral statutes that we've tried to keep a running check on. So.
Okay.
At page 12, starting at page 12, some of the Oregon cases. Page 14, I cite the Key case, Key versus Foster. Lottery contemplates prize tangible nature. It does not include a free play feature or a replay pinball machine. Okay, that brings us over to page 16, section 4, possession of gambling records, second degree. You know, in our present statutes, we do a strange thing. We prohibit the use of gambling devices. We don't prohibit the possession. But then we have a prima facie evidence section in there that says possession is prima facie evidence of use. And I've never been able to quite see why they just didn't prohibit the possession rather than the use. But anyway, this prohibits possession. A person commits a crime of possession of gambling records in the second degree if, with knowledge of the contents thereof, he possesses any writing, paper, instrument, or article, one, of a kind commonly used in the operation or promotion of a bookmaking scheme or enterprise, or two, of a kind commonly used in the operation, promotion, or playing of a lottery or mutual scheme or enterprise. Now, these are very broad statements. Now, I don't know whether they're too broad or not. Maybe they are.
Why do we even have it? We have it because the DA can't get the stuff on them for gambling, so we...
Just catch the bagman, though.
Yeah, this is the bagman statute.
Yeah.
Well, it's awful sweeping.
Oh, you follow a guy around for 2 or 3 weeks, document his pickups and drops, and you know where to hit him with a bag full of stuff. That's the only thing you can get him for, is possession of gambling records. If you don't see any money change hands. I think it's a legitimate statute.
And the broadness, I think, is better than trying to restrict it.
Trying to itemize
kind
of things. It seemed to me that's a real trap.
Paper and pencil would fall in this statute, wouldn't it?
Any writing, paper, instrument, or article.
That's really anything, because bookmaking is not just numbers bookmaking. Bookmaking is the whole broad concept of accepting bets from members of the public.
Well, if you picked this fellow up and he had nothing but a bag of pencils and some empty notebooks, you wouldn't have much of a case.
No, but what I'm saying is that it's not just the numbers, it's any...
Of course, you'd have to first prove that he was a bookmaker or they were bookmaking records.
I think that this...
Well, no, you don't.
Possession of
gambling
records.
You have to prove that they're of a kind, commonly.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have...
I like it.
Who needs Frank Knight on this subcommittee now? We've got loggerhead.
I move its passage.
Okay, any further discussion?
I'll second it.
All right. Call the roll on section
four.
Boy, what pushovers we are.
I
you know what this means?
I hope you all show up at the commission.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I have a question. Is the present statute that broad? Do you know?
Well, no, it isn't. As a matter of fact, we don't... this is a little different than anything we have now. The only thing we have, we've got possession of lottery tickets. It's the only possession type statute that I could find in the gambling area. Now, I thought about trying to cast this section in terms of specifically designed for that sort of thing. But there are so many different ways in which you can conduct a lottery or a gambling operation. So many different kinds of gimmicks that are... that that's the only thing now.
Question?
Senator Dernstead?
Aye.
Representative Hawes?
No.
Mr. Dow?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
I'll tell the ACLU.
All right, then Section 5 does the same thing that Section 3 did to Section 2, and that is it enhances the crime to first degree because of the volume of the operation.
To be consistent, we'd have to do the same thing. I'd move its passage.
All right.
Second.
Call the roll, please.
Senator Dernstead?
Aye.
Representative Hawes?
No.
Mr. Dow?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Oh, here's defenses, maybe.
Yeah, we give
maybe
the
I'll change my vote.
We give the guy a defense here.
If he doesn't have it, doesn't have it with him.
If he's innocent.
Well, this is...
stand up. I took a bad fall playing football with one of my kids over the weekend.
Oh, is that right? Get too old for that, Thomas.
Then realize an 8-year-old could tackle that hard.
Oh, this is well better done.
This is really...
this makes a... this gives you a mens rea. Or does it?
Well...
I was thinking of subsection 2.
Yeah, it shows that he had an innocent purpose, and
so you're going to have to prove intent, almost.
Oh, sure, you're going to have to, and of course our knowledge requirement under section 4 and 5 both. You're going to have to show that the guy knew, he just didn't possess these things. Innocent possession won't be prohibited. You're going to have to show he knew that what he had. Kind of gambling records you have.
Some fella says, say, buddy, drink a beer in tavern, I would you like, you're going down that way, would you drop this off at so and so?
Which will be the defense in every case. in subsection 1 of section 6, saying it's okay to a certain extent if the gambling records concern you only, which is consistent with the policy that we've apparently established that the bettor is outside the scope of the criminal law.
Yeah, these are his own bets.
But we say, we pick a figure of 10, saying, however, if they go over 10, it's no defense. Presumably, I'm sure you're saying it. If it's over 10, we don't believe you.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. That you're getting pretty heavy.
Why do we have to have an arbitrary figure in this area? Do you think, Don?
No, under what, under the defenses?
Under sub one. Wouldn't it be sufficient just to put a period after himself and strike the balance?
He's carrying a bag and has all these slips of paper and a whole box full of pencils and all these numbers on it.
I'd rather give the state maybe a prima facie case or something even to go to that point rather than.
Otherwise, you're going to have him delivering every 9 bits and running back and picking up the next 9.
Yeah.
It would triple the number of runners.
Refresh my recollection here.
I've got to go run an errand. Why don't we take a 10-minute break while you're refreshing your memory?
Okay.
Let's knock it off.